and up the stairs to the slept-in bedroom. First thing he looked at was the closet. Just for fun. Against the back wall, behind a rail of hanging pants, he found four shoeboxes. They were neatly stacked, two on two. The top two held shoes, white athletic sneakers on the left and rubber-soled black leather dress items on the right. The kind of thing a country boy might wear to a wedding or a funeral, or a visit with the loan officer at the bank. Both pairs had been worn, but not often. Both pairs were size 8.5. The hanging pants were all 32 waist and 30 leg. Billy was a small guy. 60 seconds. He checked out the window. There was a long dust plume on the dirt road. A hanging ochre cloud, long, spiraling, and drifting. A vehicle coming on fast, still just a tiny dot in the distance. Too far away to see what it was. 6 minutes, maybe. He went back in the closet, checked the bottom pair of boxes. One was full of money. Tens and twenties and fifties, used and creased, sour and greasy, done up in inch-thick bricks with rubber bands. Maybe 10 grand in total. Maybe more. The other box was full of trinkets. Mostly gold. Gold crosses on thin, tangled chains, gold earrings, gold bracelets, gold charms, gold chokers, and gold rings. Some were wedding rings. Some were class rings. Richer stepped back to the window and watched. The dust plume was a mile long, hanging in the motionless air. At the head of it was a tiny, dark dot, quivering, bobbing, bouncing. The pronghorn herd rippled, uneasy. The tiny dot looked black. It was hammering and juddering right to left in front of him. It was doing maybe 40 miles an hour, maybe more. Some kind of familiarity with the terrain, or some kind of urgency, or some kind of both. He waited. It slowed. The dust cloud caught up with it. It turned in at the driveway. Billy's ride would be a pickup truck, Reacher figured. Snow plows usually were. Winter tires, chains, a hydraulic mechanism for the blade, extra spotlights mounted high, all detached in the summer, leaving a familiar silhouette, hood, cab, bed, which Reacher didn't see. It wasn't a pickup truck. It was big and square and boxy, an SUV, a black SUV, travel-stained and dusty. It flashed in and out of sight through the trees, then it pulled clear and drove the last 100 yards over the beaten red dirt. It slowed and turned and came to a stop. It was a Toyota Land Cruiser. It had Illinois plates. Chapter 16 Reacher watched from the upstairs window. The black SUV parked a respectful distance from the house. The driver's door opened, a man stepped down. A small guy, neat and compact, in a dark suit and a shirt and a tie. Terry Bramall, from Chicago, retired FBI, the missing persons specialist. Last seen the day before in Rapid City, in the breakfast place opposite Arthur Scorpio's laundromat. The guy stood still for a long moment, and then he set out, walking toward the house with a purposeful stride. Reacher went down the stairs. He made it to the bottom and heard a knock on the door. He opened up. Bramall was standing on the porch. He had taken a polite step back. His hair was brushed. His suit was the same, but his shirt and his tie were different. He had the kind of look on his face that Reacher recognized, the kind of look he had used himself many times. Open, inquisitive, inoffensive, faintly apologetic for the interruption, but no nonsense all the same. an experienced investigator's look, which changed for a split second, first to surprise, then to puzzlement, and then finally it came back the same as before.
"Mr. Brammer," Reacher said.
"Mr. Reacher," Brammer said. "I saw you yesterday in the coffee shop in Rapid City, and the night before in the convenience store. You called me and left a message."
"Correct."
"I assume your first name isn't Billy."
"You assume right."
"Then, may I ask what you're doing here?"
"I could ask you the same question."
"May I come in?"
"At my house, not for me to say."
"Yet you seem to be making yourself at home."
Richard looked beyond Bramall's shoulder at the view. The dust cloud over the dirt road had settled. The pronghorn herd had gone back to placid grazing. Nothing was moving, no one was coming. He said,
"What do you want from Billy?"
"Information," Bramall said.
"He's not here. Probably been gone about 24 hours, or more. Scorpio left him a voicemail around this time yesterday, and it was still showing on his phone as a new message. It hadn't been picked up yet."
"He went out without his phone?"
"It was charging. Maybe it's not his main phone. It looks like a burner. Maybe it's for special purposes only."
"Did you listen to the message?"
"Yes."
"What did it say?"
"Scorpio asked Billy to shoot me with a deer rifle from behind a tree."
"To shoot you?"
"He included a description."
"That's not very nice."
"I agree." Bramall said,
"We should talk."
"On the porch," Reacher said, "in case Billy comes back." Four eyes were better than two. They sat side by side in Billy's wooden chairs, with Bramall gazing west of dead ahead and Reacher gazing east. They talked into the void in front of them, not looking at each other, which made the conversation easier in some respects and harder in others. Bramall said,
"Tell me what you know."
Reacher said, "You're retired."
"That's what you know?
Hardly relevant, or even true. I'm pursuing a second career."
"I mean you're retired FBI, which means you don't get to use FBI bullshit anymore, as in, you don't get to ask all the questions and then walk away. You get to give as well as take."
"How do you know I was FBI?"
"A police detective in Rapid City told me. Name of Nakamura."
"She must have done some research."
"That's what detectives do."
"What do you want to know?"
"Who are you looking for?"
"I'm afraid I'm bound by a certain degree of confidentiality."
Reacher said nothing. Bramall said,
"I don't even know who you are."
"Jack Reacher, no middle name. Retired military police. Some of your guys came to us for training."
"And some of yours came to us."
"So we're on an equal footing. Give and take, Mr. Brownall."
"Rank?
Does it matter?"
"You know it does."
"Terminal at Major."
"Unit?"
"Mostly the 110th MP.
"Which was?"
"Like the FBI, but with better haircuts."
"Is the military connection why you're here?"
"Should it be?"
"I'm serious," Bramall said. "Clients like discretion.
Most of the time I make my living by keeping things quiet. For all I know, you work for a website now."
"I don't,
whatever that means."
"Who do you work for?"
"I don't work."
"Then why are you here?"
"Tell me about your client, Mr. Bramall. Broad strokes, if you like. No names at this point, no identifying details."
"You can call me Terry."
And you can call me Reacher, and you can quit stalling.
My client is someone in the Chicago area worried about a family member.
Worried why?
No contact for a year and a half.
What took you to Rapid City?
Landline calls and old phone records.
What brought you here?
The same.
Was the family with the missing member originally a Wyoming family?
Bramall said nothing.
There are hundreds of families in Wyoming, Reacher said. Maybe even thousands. You won't be giving anything away.
Yes, Bramall said.
Originally it was a Wyoming family, from the other side of the Snowy Range, about 60 miles from here, maybe 70. That's about 2 blocks away by Wyoming standards.
Reacher said, had the family member in question spent time overseas?
Give and take, Mr. Reacher. You're retired, too.
Reacher checked his part of the horizon from the dirt road out past mule crossings, forlorn buildings, to the two-lane. No movement, nothing coming. He checked Bramall's part, too, tracing the dirt road west until it disappeared in the hills. No dust, no movement, nothing coming. He took the ring out of his pocket. He balanced it on his palm. He held out his hand. Bramall took the ring from him. He looked at it. He took out a pair of tortoiseshell reading glasses from an inside pocket. He read the engraving on the inner face.
SRS, 2005, he said.
Now, we really need to talk.
Reacher told him the story. The bus out of Milwaukee and the comfort stop and the pawn shop, and Jimmy Ratt in the biker bar, and Arthur Scorpio in the Rapid City laundromat, and the tale about how a guy named Porterfield brought in the ring, which had proved to be a lie, because of the big sensation with either the bear or the mountain lion, or both.
Bramall said, that was a year and a half ago?
Reacher nodded, the start of spring last year.
Which was when my client got worried.
If you say so.
And you're here in his house because you think Billy replaced Porterfield in the ring transportation business?
I think it's likely.
Why?
I'll show you, Reacher said. He checked the view again, both ways, and saw no one coming.
He led Bramall into the house and up the stairs and to Billy's bedroom, to the closet. He showed him the shoeboxes, one crammed with cash, the other rattling and tinkling with cheap gold jewelry.
Drug dealers, Bramall said. Don't you think? Small time. Home-cooked meth or cheap heroin up from Mexico. 20 bucks sees you right, and if you can't pay, you trade your rings and your necklaces, or you steal someone else's.
I thought it was all pain pills now, Reacher said.
That boom is over, Bramall said. Now it's back to how it used to be. Scorpio is the wholesaler, employing first Porterfield and now Billy as his local retailer, using the first guy as a decoy and secretly telling the second guy to get rid of you. He doesn't like scrutiny.
Possible, Reacher said.
You got another coherent explanation?
Who's your client?
A woman in Lake Forest named Tiffany Jane McKenzie, Serena Rose Sanderson's twin sister, married, hence the different name. They were close as children, but pretty soon went their separate ways. McKenzie's living the dream, big house, rich husband. She didn't altogether approve of her sister's career choice. But blood is thicker than water. There was occasional contact, until the start of spring last year. How thorough was the investigation about the bear and the mountain lion?
Very, Reacher said. By rural standards, anyway. The sheriff looked solid. There was only one body, and it was all Porterfield. They knew from his dental records and the keys in his pocket.
So you think Sanderson is still alive?
Probably. The ring showed up in Rapid City about 6 weeks ago, and in Wisconsin about 2 weeks later. I'm guessing they moved stuff along pretty quickly. The sheriff said Porterfield's car had a lot of miles. He was probably running back and forth pretty regularly. I imagine Billy is, too. What we've got here in the shoebox is probably just a few weeks' worth. The sheriff said Porterfield had cash in his closet, too. A similar amount. Small time, maybe, but it seems to add up.
So where's Billy now?
Richard stepped to the window and checked the view. No one coming, either east or west. He said, I have no idea where Billy is. There are dishes in the sink. Feels like he stepped out for a minute.
Show me the phone.
Richard led Bramall down the stairs to the small parlor and back to the phone on the desk. Bramall stabbed at buttons and played the message again.
He's like the Incredible Hulk. Don't even let him see you.
But get on it, okay? He's got to go because he's a random loose end. Bramall said,
You took a risk coming here.
Getting up in the morning is a risk. Anything could happen.
Did you know Sanderson?
No, Reacher said. I was already out 8 years before 2005.
And what's your interest?
He wouldn't understand.
Why not?
I'm not sure I understand.
Try me.
I felt sad when I saw the ring. Simple as that. It wasn't right.
You a West Pointer, too?
Long time ago.
Where's your ring?
I didn't buy one. Bramall pressed more buttons, checked the call log, looked for old voicemails, didn't find any. He went to another menu and chose a Keep as New option. The screen went back to announcing one new message the way it was when Reacher found it. Deniability. Score 1 for the Bureau. Bramall said,
Leaving dishes in his sink doesn't mean much. Maybe he's just a slob.
Leaving the phone at home doesn't necessarily mean much either. Probably doesn't work in the hills. No signal. Right here? He's got a direct line of sight to the tower in Laramie. Maybe he never carries a phone with him. Reacher said, Scorpio seems to have expected some kind of an instant response.
You believe the story about the bears and the mountain lions?
The sheriff has his doubts. He thinks maybe Porterfield was stabbed or gut shot and dumped in the woods to let nature take its course.
Maybe Billy did it. Maybe he took over from Porterfield by force, like an armed coup. Now maybe someone else has done the same thing to Billy. Live by the sword, die by the sword. What goes around, comes around.
I don't care, Reacher said. I'm here to find Sanderson, that's all.
Might not be a happy ending. Not if she traded her ring to a 2-bit dope dealer. You might not like what you find.
Someone else might have stolen it. You said so yourself.
I sure hope so,
Bramall said. Because sooner or later I'll have to give the sister the news, and then give her my invoice.
Sometimes that doesn't go down so well.
How big of an invoice?
She has a house on the lake. She can afford it.
You worth it?
Usually.
So what's your next move?
I think she's close by.
This feels like the end of the line. I think Billy is the final interface with the public. We're down to 1 degree of separation. Either she gave the ring to him herself or a neighbor stole it and gave it to him.
Not bad for the FBI,
Reacher said. Plus, Billy drives the snowplow. He knows all the local roads. Ideal cover for getting around and supplying his customers. Never held up by the weather, either. But his retail territory must be huge. Like you said, 2 blocks is 70 miles out here. All the way to Sanderson's childhood home, as a matter of fact. I assume you've already looked there?
The assumption is Sanderson won't go back. Her sister was sure of it.
Why?
She didn't explain. So knowing that, where would you start?
I could tell you, but then I'd have to bill you.
Bramall said, "Did you park your car in the barn?"
Richard said, "I don't have a car."
"Then how did you get all the way out here?"
"Hitchhiked and walked."
"Suppose I let you ride in my truck?"
"That would be nice."
"Suppose you shut up about a bill?"
"Deal," Reacher said.
"So, where?"
"What other information did the sister give you? Any names or places?"
"She says Sanderson was always very cagey. Maybe embarrassed, maybe upset. She never mentioned locations. She never said what she was doing. They could go 3 months without talking."
"Is that usual for twins?"
"Twins are siblings, same as anyone else."
"She got nothing at all. The last time they spoke, she got the impression Sanderson had a friend called Cyrus. She heard her say that name."
"Cyrus?" "Well, Cy, at least. As if he was in the room with her, like, 'Shut up, Cy, I'm on the phone.' Said in a friendly way, like she was comfortable with him. The sister says for a second she sounded happy."
"Was that rare?"
"Very."
"When was this?"
"A couple of years ago, she thinks. Maybe a bit less."
"Is that all she got?"
"She said their conversations were usually very stiff. 'Are you okay? Yes, I'm okay,' that kind of thing."
"Maybe it wasn't Cy for Cyrus," Reacher said. "Maybe it was Cy for Seymour, which was Porterfield's first name. Scorpio told me he went by Cy. Let's go find where he lived. That would be my first move. There might still be something there, or neighbors we can talk to."
Chapter 17. The old guy in the old post office had said Porterfield had lived in a log house up in the hills, maybe 20 miles down the dirt road, on one of the old ranches Reacher had seen on the university's map, behind fence lines as fine as the engraving on a $100 bill. Bramall's Land Cruiser had a navigation screen that showed the dirt road, but not much else. So they watched the trip meter and drove west and counted the miles as they clicked by. The truck was as neat and competent as Bramall himself. It floated over the rough surface and felt like it could run forever. Reacher asked, "When was the last time the sisters met face to face?" Bramall said,
7 years ago,
after Sanderson's third deployment. The visit didn't go so well. I guess they decided not to repeat it. After that, it was all on the phone. Sanderson was wounded at some point."
"I didn't know that. Mrs. McKenzie never mentioned it."
"She might not have known about it. Sanderson might not have told her."
"Why wouldn't she?"
"It happens a lot. It's a complex dynamic. Maybe she didn't want to upset her family, or appear diminished in any way, or weak, or to appear to be asking for sympathy or help, or to avoid a told-you-so moment. Sounds like her sister didn't like the army."
"Wounded how bad?"
"I don't know," Reacher said. "All I know is she got a Purple Heart, which can be anything from a scratch to losing a limb, or all of them. Some of those people came home in a hell of a mess."
The mileage counter showed 8 miles gone. Bramall was quiet for a long moment, then he said,
"You sure you want to do this?
I don't see how the outcome can be good. She's either all messed up or a junkie, or both. She might not want to be found."
"In which case, I'll leave her alone. I'm not trying to save the world. I just want to know."
10 miles gone. Either side of the road, the high plains were getting higher.
The mountain foothills rippled and folded, and tongues of conifer forest came and went. The sky was huge and high and impossibly blue, like a sapphire on the horizon, shading to deep navy way overhead, like a Kodak photograph, like the edge of outer space. The wind was getting up. The dust plume behind them was pulling south off the road.
PTSD, too, Bramall said. I guess they all have that.
I guess they do, Reacher said. 14 miles. Aspen groves blazed like flares on the slopes. Whole copses of hundreds of separate trees, but all joined together underground by a single root. An aspen wood was all one organism, the largest living thing on earth. Bramall said,
Did the guy mean 20 miles to the house itself, or 20 miles to the end of the driveway?
The driveway, Reacher said, I guess. That's how it worked with Billy's place. Except the guy underestimated. He called it about 20% short.
So his 20 miles could be 25.
Unless sometimes he overestimates also. Maybe he's an all-around inaccurate guy, on a number of levels on a random basis, which could make his 20 miles 16, which would give us a 9-mile window.
Then logically, we should take the next track we see. Unlikely to be 2 and a 9-mile distance, this is Wyoming. Therefore, the first track is our track, however sooner or later it comes.
Not bad. For the FBI, Reacher said. The track came bang in the middle of the 9-mile stretch at 20 miles from the post office exactly. Score 1 for the old guy. It was a right turn off the dirt road under a high ranch gate, which had a name on it spelled out in letters so weathered Reacher couldn't read them. Then the track ran straight north for close to a mile, before rising and curving west through the trees out of sight toward an unseen destination. Bramall stopped the truck. He said,
From my point of view, this kind of thing is perfectly normal. I drive up to hundreds of houses. Sometimes there's yelling and sometimes there are dogs, but no one has ever discharged a weapon in my direction. We should talk about how you think those odds might change with you in the car right next to me.
You want me to get out and walk? Reacher said. Feel safer that way?
It's a tactical discussion.
Worst case, Billy took over Porterfield's house as well as his business, and he's in there now. He wasn't in his other place, after all.
Why would he want two places?
Some people do. Not 20 miles apart. They have a house on the lake.
There were no heirs or relatives. Why wouldn't Billy take it?
Doesn't matter if he did. Doesn't matter if he's in there now. He never got the phone message. He doesn't know me from Adam. He'll think we're Mormons.
You're not dressed like a Mormon.
So you go knock on the door, just in case. If he's there, tell him you're a Mormon, who is coincidentally also in the snowplow business, and you want to talk to him about insurance against global warming. The truck moved on. The track ran through the wooded slopes 5 more miles, always rough, with deep, baked ruts in places, and worn gravel and flat rocks the size of tables. The Land Cruiser nodded from side to side and soldiered on. All the way through a final curve and up a sudden sharp rise to a stadium-sized plateau full of trees, except for a home site set about a third of the way in. It had a long, low log house with wide porches all around, all in the center of a slightly tended acre, behind an informal fence made up of posts and rails twisted and grayed by the wind and the weather. Bramall drove in and parked a respectful distance from the house. There were tatters of crime scene tape on the porch rails either side of the entrance, as if at one time the house was roped off.
"This wasn't the crime scene," Bramall said. "The guy died in the woods."
"He was found in the woods," Reacher said. "Maybe the sheriff thought that was a whole different thing entirely. We know he searched here. He found a car with a lot of miles and 10 grand in the closet."
"Where's Billy right now?"
"Why worry about him?"
"I'm not, but you should. Scarpio was ordering a homicide."
"Billy's not here. What are the odds? Plus, he didn't get the message. He doesn't know Scarpio gave me Porterfield's name, so why would he come here to Porterfield's house? What were the odds we would ever find it anyway? Who knew the old post office guy was so good at guessing distances? Billy is somewhere else, and this place is empty."
"Okay,"
Bramall said. He got out of the car and went to knock on the door, a purposeful stride. Reacher saw him knock, and he heard the sound loud and clear, a fraction delayed by the distance, like a mismatched movie soundtrack. He saw Bramall step back politely. No one came to the door. No movement anywhere. Bramall knocked again. The same, no reaction. He walked back and got in the truck and said,
"This place is empty."
Reacher said, "How do you feel about going in?"
"It's all closed up."
"We could break a window." "Legally, we have to ask ourselves if the county owns it now, which it might, officially, because of the unpaid taxes. Breaking into county property is a big step. You can't fight City Hall." "Maybe you smelled a suspicious smell, or thought you heard something like a despairing cry, the kind of thing that would justify a warrantless search. Did you?"
"No,"
Bramall said. "You're retired," Reacher said. "You don't have to stick to FBI bullshit anymore."
"What would be the army approach? Set the place on fire?"
"No, that would be the Marine Corps approach. The army would conduct a careful survey of the exterior, and by great good fortune would discover a pane of glass previously broken by persons unknown at a previous time, maybe long ago, or even just recently, which, if true, would reasonably suggest an ongoing emergency inside, which in turn would justify a good look around. I don't think the Supreme Court could argue with that."
"Previously broken, either recently or a long time ago?"
"Obviously, any sounds you hear in real time will be me, accidentally stepping on previously broken glass, left lying on the porch ever since the unknown previous incident. That can sound very like a freshly breaking window. It's a common illusion."
"That's a standard FBI trick, too. We weren't all bullshit."
"Some of you came to us for training."
"And some of you came to us?"
"I'm going to conduct a careful survey," Reacher said. He got out of the car. Chapter 18. It was a big house, but an easy survey, because the porch ran all the way around the structure, flat and level and true, and it served up all the first-floor doors and windows at a convenient height for inspection. Reacher started at the front, with the door Bramall had knocked on, which was a solid wooden affair locked tight and way too much effort to break down. So he moved on to a hallway window, which would have taken no effort at all to get through, except it was on the front of the house, and even in the uninhabited middle of nowhere, some ancient part of his brain sounded a warning. The front was never good. Not during, and not even afterward. Why leave after-action evidence in plain view? Not that there would be much. A discreet punched-out hole in the glass about the size of a big man's elbow, and a slit insect screen rippling in the breeze. That would be all. Not much. But maybe enough to catch a passerby's eye. Always safer if that kind of thing happened later, not sooner. For all kinds of reasons. The back was better. Reacher walked down the side of the house, past five more windows all the same as the front, which made it likely the windows in back would be all the same, too. Some kind of a unifying design theme. Or some kind of a big discount for a bulk purchase. But either way was good news. Windows like that were easy. He turned the corner, and the first window he came to was broken. It had a hole punched through it about the size of a big man's elbow. The insect screen was slit. The broken glass was dirty, and the screen was mildewed. A year, maybe more. At least 4 seasons of wind and weather. Inside was a kitchen. Countertops that should have been shiny were dull with dust. Beyond the kitchen was a dining area, all gloom and shadows. He walked the long way around the porches and back to the car. Bramall had gotten out again. He was standing in a no-man's land patch of dirt about 30 feet from the house. Reacher said, "I found a busted window."
"Nicely done," Bramall said. "I didn't hear a thing."
For real, an actual busted window, previously broken by persons unknown, a year or more ago by the look of it, exactly how we would have done it.
"Show me," Bramall said.
Reacher led him along the front porch and the side porch and around the corner to the back. Bramall took a good long look. He seemed impressed by the mildew. He said,
"A year, at least. Let's say a year and a half."
"Why not?"
"Let's say this happened right after Porterfield died."
"Was it the sheriff?"
"You told me he searched the place."
"The sheriff had the keys," Reacher said. "He found them in Porterfield's pocket. That's how they identified him, along with his teeth. So the sheriff didn't need to break in. This was someone else who didn't have the keys."
"Squatters, maybe."
"They wouldn't bust the kitchen window. The kitchen is a room they would want to use. They would have busted a window somewhere else."
"Ordinary burglars, then?"
"Possible. We'll know by how much mess they made."
"We're still going inside?"
"We were before," Reacher said. "I don't see why we shouldn't now. This is practically an open invitation. We have a duty. As citizens,
to call the sheriff, technically.
It's a gray area. The owner is dead. There are no heirs. It's a different situation. People read whole books about this kind of thing in law school. I'm sure the sheriff doesn't want to get in a big, long discussion. Plus, this could be where she called her sister. Right here. When she said, 'Shut up. Sigh. I'm on the phone.' Had to be his place or hers. Either way, she spent time here. So you know we're going in."
"I know I am," Bramall said. "But you're under no obligation."
"You looking out for me now?"
"I feel I ought to point out the legal downside."
"I get it. You want me to go first, so you can say to yourself, the worst thing you ever did was get all swept up. You want me to be the bad guy, because you have scruples."
"Not as such.
What I have is a license from the state of Illinois, which I would like to keep. Doesn't matter who goes first. What matters is it would count against me if I didn't explicitly caution a junior partner against potential legal jeopardy."
"Are we partners?"
"Effectively. Junior and senior?"
"By age and experience."
"Do you have to explicitly caution me every step of the way?"
Technically,
yes. Let's not do that part, okay? Let's take it as read. More fun that way.
Okay, Bramwell said. You want fun? You go first.
Bramwell's contribution was to stick his arm in through the hole in the glass and wind the window open with the inside handle. Reacher's jacket was new, and his shirt was new. He didn't want to smear either one of them with mildew, which he would if he pushed through the slit in the screen, like the original intruder or intruders must have a year or more ago, back when the screen was clean. So he tore it out of its frame, all the way around, and folded it in a ragged square and dropped it on the porch. Best way into a kitchen was face down and feet first, because of the countertop. You stood a chance of ending the maneuver standing on your feet, not your hands. But it was hard to set up. It required a contortion. Worse, if there was a sink under the window with a tap, which could get to the wrong place at the wrong time. But Porterfield's sink was on a different wall, which helped a little. Reacher felt his legs swim free, and he jackknifed at the waist and planted his feet and pushed himself upright, inside, looking out. The kitchen was a little weather-beaten because of the hole in the glass, but it had started out expensive. That was clear. The wood was thick, and the granite was thicker. There were appliances made out of stainless steel. They all had clock screens, dark and blank. There was absolute silence, no subliminal hum, no rustle in the pipes, no power, no water, no one paying the bills. All closed up. He moved on through the gloom out of the kitchen into the dining area, from where he saw the living room, all open plan with a complicated cathedral ceiling and a full-height rock fireplace made out of stones the size of tractor tires. A trophy cabin. Authentic designs didn't have fireplaces built with forklift trucks and hydraulic cranes. They used smaller rocks. And why make a weird ceiling where a flat one would fit? But it was a lived-in trophy cabin. Reacher didn't hate it. The log walls were stained a light honey shade. The furniture looked comfortable but unobtrusive. There were weird collections on shelves. Animal skulls, interesting stones, interesting pine cones. Almost a family feel. A rich family feel. He walked back to the kitchen, to the broken window. Bramall was looking in at him. Reacher said, "Nothing to worry about. It's like a time capsule, which rules out a burglary, because nothing is out of place. The dust is a uniform thickness everywhere. There's no mess at all, which I guess rules out squatters, too."
"I'm coming in," Bramall said.
He was stiffer in the joints than Reacher, but those joints started out much closer together because he was smaller, so overall his maneuver was easier. He pushed himself upright and looked around the same way Reacher had. Kitchen, dining area, living room, undisturbed. Bramall said,
"Not what I expected."
"In what way?" Reacher said.
"If I had a cabin, it might look like this."
"Dope dealers don't have taste."
"Not usually."
Reacher checked the hallway. He said,
"There are bedrooms at both ends."
Bramall said,
"If it wasn't burglars or squatters, who broke the window?"
"Not the sheriff," Reacher said, "but like the sheriff, a pro with a reason to search."
"But where's the mess? Pro searchers tear a place apart."
"Maybe they found what they wanted the first place they looked. Maybe that's what it means to be a pro. Or maybe they knew where it was all along. Maybe they came to get something back."
"Get what back?"
I don't care, Reacher said. All I want to do is find Sanderson.
You think she was here, back when she was dating a dope dealer worth getting gut shot or stabbed in the stomach?
You're her older brother now?
I doubt the relationship would have happened. She would have done better for herself.
She said, shut up, Si, I'm on the phone. Even the uptight twin called it friendly and comfortable and happy. Best case, they were real good friends.
Even worse, Bramall said. You choose your friends.
Either way, they spent time together. Here and her place, wherever that is.
A year and a half ago.
Better than nothing.
If your Si is the right Si.
50-50, right or wrong. Not bad odds. Bramall took out his phone.
2 bars, he said. She could have called from here.
What did the cell records say?
You need 3 masts to triangulate. There's only one here, omnidirectional.
She was calling from somewhere inside a giant circular area about the size of New Jersey. That's all we know.
Could have been here. No reason why not.
Bramall moved to the center of the living room. He said,
it was a year and a half ago, and this place has been searched twice since then. And if you're right about someone getting something back, then the most important thing we could have found is already gone. So this is about looking for what 2 other parties missed, which is slow work. How long have we got?
Out here? About 100 years, I would think, Reacher said. Pull your car around the back and we could move in and live here forever. No one would ever know.
Okay, we'll search together. No lookout. 2 heads are better than 1.
They found the first missed item in less than a minute. Chapter 19. It was in a mud room near the back door, in a closet where snow clothes were kept. A pair of snow pants had slipped off a hanger, some kind of stiff nylon. They had hit the floor like spears, and then half crumpled and half stayed rigid like wobbly legs, like a cartoon picture of a guy who just received a nasty shock. They had toppled backward and had ended up half propped in the corner. Reacher moved them, purely out of habit, and behind them he found a pair of women's snow boots, a technical product with hooks and loops, a woman's size 6, which was small. He said,
boots in the closet is a thing, right? She spent quality time here. If it was her, could have been anybody.
I agree. But it's evidence a guy 2 separate people described as a loner living alone actually had a companion in his house, which should have tilted the investigation a little when such a guy shows up dead. Maybe we can forgive the sheriff. He had a preconceived notion. And I bet everyone in Wyoming has a closet like that. Hard to see what you always see. But whoever came along afterward should have seen it. They should have had fresh eyes. Makes me wonder who they were and what they were doing. Maybe they didn't really look at anything. Maybe it really was a fast in and out to get something back. Has to be. Nothing else has been touched. Bramall said,
we should check the other closets.
They did. But there was nothing in them except Porterfield's own stuff. Apparently, he had been a guy who liked blue jeans and saw no problem at all with laundering things until they went threadbare. No women's clothing, no dresses, no blouses, no pants. Bramall said,
why would she leave only her boots behind?
She left at the start of spring. She hadn't used them for a month. She forgot them. Or maybe they were uncomfortable. Maybe she left them on purpose. Maybe She was fixing to buy new. But she was here. Or someone was. Porterfield didn't live alone. Not all the time.
That's a lot to read into a pair of boots.
I bet we find more. They did, but not much more. After 2 hours, they had a very modest haul, more persuasive than conclusive. They saved time by ignoring what was on open view. Instead, they looked inside things and under things and behind things. They found a woman's comb between the sofa cushions. It was made of pink plastic. All the teeth were widely spaced, not half and half like a regular comb. In the master bathroom, they found two sinks, each with a soap dish, one with a dried-out cake of scented soap, and one with a dried-out cake of plain. Also in the bathroom, they found two sets of towels laid out. In the laundry room, behind the dryer, they found a pair of women's athletic socks, some kind of miracle fiber, small in size, pink in color, stuck all over with dust bunnies. That was it. Not enough for a courtroom, but suggestive. Reacher said, "She was here, or someone was, at least some of the time. Maybe just a casual, on-again, off-again type of thing, but she was here long enough to get somewhat ingrained. When she left, she did it in style. She made a clean break, some kind of statement. She scoured the place and packed up everything of hers she could see, leaving behind only the few things she couldn't, like her lost comb. She couldn't take her soap anyway. At the time, it was all wet and slimy. Couldn't just toss it in a bag with her clothes. She didn't count the towels. Who would? She forgot his snow boots, but it's the socks I like best.
Why?
They prove she still has two legs. The Purple Heart might not be as bad as it could be.
If it's her.
Suppose it was. Porterfield must have gone to her place from time to time. Where would that be? How far from here? Suppose you were a guy like Porterfield. How far would you drive to get laid?
Depends.
On what?
A number of things.
Look on the bright side. Maybe not Miss America, exactly, but assume she's a nice-looking person.
This is Wyoming. They drive epic distances for a loaf of bread. For a girlfriend. 2 hours, maybe. 100 miles.
Which doesn't help us, Reacher said. That's too big of an area to contemplate. Bramall nodded.
I was going to say our next move should be go talk to Porterfield's neighbors, but I don't know exactly what that means out here. Everyone lives 20 miles from everyone else. I bet they never see each other.
But I guess they depend on each other. Suppose they get a sudden emergency. Who are they going to call? The police department? Or the fire department? 2 hours away, or their nearest neighbor who could be there in 15 minutes. Maybe that's the country way. Maybe country neighbors are closer than you suspect. Maybe they're always into each other's business and have plenty to tell us.
They're very cheerful.
Reacher didn't answer. He was alone in the kitchen, perhaps subconsciously needing to keep his exit in view. The open window with the broken glass and the torn-out screen. A cool breeze came in, and borne on it, sounds. Most of them were inoffensive. Wind in the trees, the beat of a heavy bird's wing, a bee flying by and pausing and flying on. One sound was different. Very brief and very distant. Barely audible. A fragment only, a tiny scratch or a tiny crunch or a tiny squelch. A small part of a familiar local sound, a Wyoming sound. Like all sounds made from a mix of different components, like DNA. grit was involved, and rock, and rubber. "We need to get out," he said. "There's a car on the driveway." Bramall went first, less likely to get stuck. Reacher followed him successfully, and Bramall put his arm back in and wound the handle to close the window. Then they hustled to the front. Nothing yet.
"We should get in the car," Bramall said, "just in case."
Reacher said, "If in doubt, run them over." They climbed in the Toyota, and Bramall started the motor. A truck came up over the final rise and started across the plateau. It was a Ford pickup truck, loaded with a police department version of a camper shell. Its paint was clean and shiny, all white except for the doors, which had gold stars about 2 feet wide and 2 feet high, with the county's name in a curve above and sheriff's department in a curve below, a little like a West Point ring. Sheriff Connolly. Connolly parked close by the Toyota at a casual angle, partly to look nonchalant and unworried and therefore unthreatening, but mostly, Reacher thought, to subtly block off the Toyota's forward path. The guy had judged it well. Not obvious, but the Toyota would have to back up and loop around. Connolly buzzed his window down. He was wearing his hat in the car. Plenty of room. It was a tall truck. Reacher buzzed his window down. He was closest. Connolly said, "You told me you had no connections to Porterfield." Reacher said, "I don't." "Yet here you are at his house." "The woman I'm looking for was here, at least for a few months. I'm trying to figure out where she went next." "Porterfield lived alone." "Not always." Connolly said, "Have you been inside the house?" "Yes," Reacher said. "How?" "There was a previous break-in here. A year or more ago, we went in the same hole."
"What break-in?"
"You searched this place when he died. You found what you found, and you locked up and drove away. Then someone else came by and went in the window."
"Show me,"
Connolly said. They got out of their cars and trooped back to the far corner of the house. Connolly took a good long look. He unfolded the torn-out insect screen and held it in place, as if recreating the original scene. He rubbed the mildew between finger and thumb and sniffed it. He said,
"Could be a year and a half."
Then he said, "Are things inside?" Reacher said, "No mess, no damage, nothing pulled out or overturned. This wasn't a burglary or squatters." Connolly said, "Why do you think there was a woman living up here?" They moved to the porch rail, facing the rear view, all lined up, looking straight ahead at trees and mountains. Bramall talked through the boots and the comb and the soap and the towels and the small pink socks. Connolly said,
"The boots don't mean much, or the comb or the socks. They could be historic. 20 years ago, there could have been nieces and cousins here every summer and winter. That kind of stuff stays lost a long time."
"But," Reacher said,
"I'm prepared to admit when I make a mistake. I like the soap and the towels. Two sinks in use always means a couple, and if one soap is smelly, it's a man and a woman. And soap and towels is real-time evidence. That's exactly how the room looked the morning Porterfield died. I guess I missed it. But no one came forward at the time. No one ever has. All the evidence said Porterfield was a loner, and no one else had barely even met him. So where was the woman then? And where is she now? That's what we're trying to figure out. If it's the same woman." "Nothing says it isn't." Connolly said,
The ring you showed me was pretty small.
Yes, it was, Reacher said.
Are you judging this thing by the size of the socks? Because maybe they shrunk.
The boots didn't. They're small, too.